Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. Fans of our show might notice that every week I try to find a theme that binds the various movies that Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss. This week, though, is different. Try as I might, I just couldn't find anything that tethers Bumblebee, the spinoff from Michael Bay's Transformer series, with Vice, Adam McKay's imaginative, irreverent look at the life and times of former Vice President Dick Cheney. Despite my failure, though, I urge you not to touch that dial, because what is likely to be a fairly interesting Movies 101 will be coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
When you hear us say, listener-supported public radio, what are we really saying? Public radio is shorthand for thought-provoking, well-crafted, stimulating programs. Listener-supported means it's your money that pays for those programs. And not only the programs, but the transmitters, the computers, the electricity, everything it takes to bring you those programs. So here's a very large thank you to you, the listener, in listener-supported public radio.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbinder, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that has lots of heart, which is a reference that is bound to come up when we begin discussing the first of the two films we will be dealing with this week, Adam McKay's imaginative, distinctly caustic study of former Vice President Dick Cheney, succinctly titled Vice. It's far less fitting when applied to our second film, Bumblebee, which is a prequel to Michael Bay's 2007 original in the now six-film Transformer series. Unless, of course, you subscribe to the notion that anything other than organic life can have a heart or a soul. Either way, let's begin our discussion with a look at a man who, and there can be little argument about this, had as much effect on the world scene of the early 21st century as anyone could. And that man is, of course, Dick Cheney. From humble origins in Wyoming and Nebraska, Cheney rose to the highest ranks of world power, serving as a five-time congressman, Secretary of Defense, White House Chief of Staff, and CEO of the multinational oil field service corporation Halliburton. But Cheney's lasting fame will no doubt be the 8 years he served as George W. Bush's vice president, a tenure that saw him reshape what traditionally has been a mostly ceremonial office into one that wielded real power. Adam McKay, who won an Oscar for his 2015 film The Big Short, a film for which he was also nominated as Best Director, uses much the same in-your-face style for Vice, his study of Cheney's life and career. Playing fast and loose with chronology, McKay fills out the vast unknown aspects involving the famously private Cheney and his family, notably wife Lynn and daughters Liz and Mary, by blending fantasy and supposition with actual fact. And he plays with our expectations throughout, at one point having the film's narrator, a role filled by the actor Jesse Plemons, explain how real life can't be captured by a Shakespearean soliloquy, only to have his two principal cast members, Christian Bale, almost unrecognizable as Cheney, Amy Adams as hard-nosed wife Lynn, begin reciting lines in the manner of Shakespeare. At another point, McKay actually ends his movie, only to virtually yell, "Just joking," and continue on. Your take on Vice is likely to depend, one, on your political leanings, and two, on how much narrative leeway you think a filmmaker should employ. One thing, though, is undeniable. Unless someone told you, you would never, ever suspect that the screen Cheney is the same handsome actor who once played Batman.
That's one of the benefits and detriments of the film Vice, because initially we see Christian Bale transform himself into Dick Cheney, because in his younger years, he was not quite the Cheney that we've come to know and maybe some people love. Just saying, Nathan's
I don't know. Is that
really
possible?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
But
moving on.
That's hard to get beyond, because you focus so much on looking at Christian Bale and his makeup and the transformation that it's hard to focus on other things. If in Vice you allow yourself to move past that, you can see that this film is very artfully constructed. Now, having said that, Dan, as you acknowledged, there are some chronologies that are a little bit out of sync. There are some events that happen maybe not exactly as they're portrayed here. But all in all, I think that McKay is trying to stick with real events. Except, here's the problem. As you point out, those people who are liberals and progressives will, for the most part, like this film, and I think other people will be put off by it. Even though I think at different points in Vice, McKay portrays Cheney more sympathetically than might be warranted, given everything that happens with respect to Iraq and Halliburton and so forth and so on. So I don't know. I'm very much of two minds about this film. It worked on one level. I don't think it's as witty and sardonic as The Big Short, and I think it coulda, woulda, shoulda been. I think the performances are excellent. I haven't even talked about Amy Adams, and she did an amazing job. But there was something that just was a little bit off for me, and I can't really pinpoint what that is.
Well,
Nathan, help me out.
Yeah, I mean, the performances here, I think, are kind of the selling point in Vice, because the transformation, I sometimes bristle at these performances, and Christian Bale's made a bunch of them, where
the whole
thing is that he's transformed his body and his and his face. But I mean, his likeness to Dick Cheney is remarkable. I never, ever would have thought, you know who we should get to play Dick Cheney? Christian Bale.
Yeah, right.
Or for that matter, Sam Rockwell as George W. Bush. Or Donald Rumsfeld being played by Steve
Carell.
Sort of a mistake when they picked the fellow to play Gerald Ford. That guy did not fit in on any
some
level.
Of the secondary.
Don't know what happened. But
Tyler Perry is Colin Powell, which also was not expecting. So I
didn't even recognize.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I think the casting here is kind of part of the joke a little bit, because we know Donald Rumsfeld, but we also know Steve Carell, and we're constantly aware we're watching Steve Carell play Donald Rumsfeld. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of in keeping with Adam McKay's stylistic conceit here, because this movie, like The Big Short, if you'll recall, The Big Short was explaining a very complex thing and deliberately dumbing it down for us.
But we had
Margot Robbie telling us that's what it was doing. Yeah, we had Margot Robbie explaining the housing crisis and Anthony Bourdain explaining how the whole thing was run like a restaurant. And Vice has those kinds of things in it, too. There's not just the running narration by Jesse Plemons, and that character is sort of emblematic of the changes that are happening in America at the time. You've also got that Shakespearean scene that kind of comes out of nowhere. I thought the alternate ending halfway through the movie was the most brilliant joke in the movie. But there's also a scene where they go to a restaurant, and the waiter, played by Alfred Molina, is explaining. It was a very Big Short kind of thing where he's explaining these complex things as if they're items on a restaurant menu. And I thought that was smart, too. Having said all of that, this movie is just a lot. There's so much going on, and he's trying so many different things. It is a kind of an experimental film in that way. And I don't think he ever really settles on a unifying tone or a unifying message, even. I'm not really sure what he was trying to say with this. And there's a moment near the end where Dick Cheney, the character played by Christian Bale, looks directly into the camera and addresses us in the audience. And I thought that might be where all of the pieces clicked into place, but it actually ends up scattering them even further.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that this is well done on a technical level, but it almost seemed like he needed to trim the fat on this. There's so many different things and tones, and maybe that was the point, but it's kind of a mess.
I agree. It was scattered.
Yeah.
That's the appropriate word.
By design, needed, I think.
Yeah, but he needed an editor, like an outsider, to come in and to maybe
tell him no every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a legitimate question to ask about Vice, because there's so many good things about it. Let's get away from the notion of, I'm a member of the Republican Party, I hate this movie. Oh, I'm a Democrat, I love this movie. Let's get away from that and just look at it in terms of a film itself. The Big Short, as you pointed out, Nathan, was a lot thrown on the big screen, but somehow he made it work.
It had a vision.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And in Vice, I'm not so sure that he does. I think you have to ask yourself at this point, is this style of filmmaking the only thing that McKay can do? And does it fit every single storyline? I mean, might this not have been a more effective movie had he just played it straight?
Well, that's the conundrum here, because I'm really mixed on this movie. In theory, I like a lot of the things he's doing here. This movie looks like gangbusters on paper, because he's taking the format of a biopic, a standard political biopic. And we've seen a lot of them, and they're not always good. I mean, think back to Oliver Stone's movie about George W. Bush, which was awful.
Well, yeah,
and that played it pretty straight.
Oliver Stone has never had a sense of humor, and that's his big problem.
Maybe. But with Vice, I appreciated the fact that Adam McKay was thinking outside of the box on some of these set pieces that he has. Let's kind of narrow it down to the Jesse Plemons conceit.
Yeah.
Because we don't really know what's going on here. There's this guy and he's sitting in his living room with his little kid and he's narrating the movie. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know who he is, but
he's sort of Joe Blue Collar.
Yeah, right. And we see him through his life and we kind of start to figure it out. Like, okay, I kind of see what he's doing here. And then there's a thing that happens at the end where this narrator character has something of an arc. And the way that arc is tied up at the end, I could see how he thought that would be kind of like a brilliant idea, but I don't think it works. It's a swing and a miss for me, but at least he's swinging, you know? Yeah. So I appreciated this movie for what it was trying to do. I just think that it's trying to do so much that the success rate is low in Vice.
We haven't even talked about Vice because there's a whole other parallel track here, which is Dick Cheney as the man, as a family man, as his relationship with Lynn. I thought Amy Adams did a marvelous job.
Yeah, she was the Queen Gorgo.
Yeah, she really was. Come home with your shield or on it.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we see the relationship with the two daughters, and that shifts over time. And then you have to make some decisions about what's most important. And I think that you're right, Nathan. It was trying to do this historical thing. It was trying to do a political thing. It was trying to do a war, anti-war thing. It was trying to do the family thing. It was trying to, you know, work in Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
And depending upon your political perspective, to get back to that for one second, you can come out of this movie saying, absolutely, that's my man, versus what a horror show we experienced for that 8 years. There's no clear message. I think that as you're pointing out, Nathan, that it's really difficult to come out with a feeling of, yeah, he really nailed that. It's like, wow, that was an interesting experiment in film.
Most of all, though, with Vice, I wasn't really convinced of the arc that Adam McKay created for Dick Cheney. I never really understood how he went from this relatively idealistic congressional intern to this cutthroat political criminal, essentially. I never really understood or bought that transformation because it kind of seems to happen out of nowhere in this movie. And I understand in real world terms how that could happen. But as the movie presents it, I wasn't really buying what it was selling.
And much less even a step before that, how he was a drunken lineman in Casper, Wyoming, and next thing you know, he is a congressional intern.
I think there's almost too much here to tackle in a two-hour film, but I guess I appreciate the effort and the fact that he's trying to tackle so much stuff.
Apparently, a lot was left on the cutting room floor.
I don't envy the editors
of this
thing.
Can you say miniseries?
That might have worked better.
Yeah. And that was Vice. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the latest addition to the Transformers franchise, Bumblebee. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Adam McKay's film Vice. Let's now move to something just slightly more based in fiction, the first installment of the Transformers franchise that was not directed by Michael Bay. It's all too common anymore to find movie franchises based on toys, whether they be Barbies, G.I. Joes, or Legos. One of the most popular live-action franchises, though, began in 2007 when Michael Bay released Transformers, a film based on the popular toy line put out by Hasbro, featuring robots that can turn into cars and other objects. Bay directed the following four films, which continue the story of alien robots waging a civil war using Earth as their battleground. Now Bay is just producing, leaving the directing of the latest film, both a spin-off and a prequel titled Bumblebee, to Travis Knight, an animator best known for the 2016 film Kubo and the Two Strings. Written by Christina Hodson, Bumblebee begins with war shaking the robot planet of Cybertron, causing the good side, the Autobots, to send one of their own to Earth. Once there, though, the robot named B-127 is damaged, and just before it loses its memory, it becomes a 1967 Volkswagen Bug. Purchased later by a rebellious team named Charlie, played by Haley Steinfeld, who ends up naming the yellow vehicle Bumblebee, our friendly Autobot ultimately revives, thereby attracting the attention both of the U.S. military and of his Civil War enemies, the Decepticons. Marked mostly by the usual impressive use of computer graphics, Bumblebee is a kids' film that adds to the Transformers story and features what might be a star-making performance by Steinfeld, while being something that will be forgotten by most adults shortly after the curtain falls.
I don't know if you can say that it's a star-making performance. She's an Academy Award-nominated actress.
That's
and
right.
She's had pop hits. So.
That's right. Has she had any role that featured her this much of
no.
the film? She is the star of this
yeah.
movie, and the camera
and
loves her.
And she's really good in
so,
this movie.
Yes. It's her breakout role. Even though, as you point
yeah,
out,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know about
anyway,
that.
Anyway,
yeah.
We're getting hung up on labels here. I tapped out on the Transformers series a long time ago. I think I saw the first two. I thought they were the worst things I'd ever seen. And
oh, no.
So
I loved the first one.
Oh, I was baffled by the good reviews at the time.
Remember, we're talking about Michael Bay. So
I don't
sitting here thinking,
okay.
Wow, that's a Michael Bay movie I can actually like. And
no,
I like the
it sucked
interplay
at the time.
Between
it sucks
the family,
now. They all suck.
Shia LaBeouf and his mom and dad. I
no.
thought it was okay.
No, it was all bad. Anyway, having said that, I liked Bumblebee. I was pleasantly surprised by it because this is a movie that, unlike the Michael Bay films, had a sense of visual clarity. I could understand what was happening. There's a sense of modesty
That's
about
a very
this movie.
Low bar, buddy.
No, I know. I'm like tiptoeing over the bar. It has a sense of modesty, which Michael Bay has never been known for. And it also has a sense of discovery. And I was reminded a lot of, and I think this is a deliberate thing on Bumblebee's part, I was reminded of early Spielberg films. I mean, it's set in the 1980s in the suburbs. There's this alien creature that comes down and befriends a girl.
And there's a sweetness about it.
Yeah, and she has to keep it a secret from her parents, and then the big bad government steps up. I mean, this is E.T., essentially. And Spielberg is an executive producer on this, like he was on all of the other Transformers movies. And it is set in 1987, so it's got a nice pop soundtrack from the time. I related to the Haley Steinfeld character on the
because
level
she
that
those,
she loved the
she
Smiths
had those
and
pop
I
shirts.
Loved the Smiths.
Right.
And she had a really cool Elvis Costello t-shirt that I want. Having said that, it was interesting because in the first part of the show, we were talking about how Vice, the Adam McKay film, was almost trying to do too much and its vision was bigger than it could possibly fulfill. And I wish that this movie were a little less predictable and a little less conventional because, like you said, this is more of a kids' film than the Transformers movies are. I mean, I think we were all able to tell exactly where it was heading. There are no surprises in this movie at all, other than the fact that it's actually not bad. That's, I think, the biggest surprise of Bumblebee. So it's a pleasant Christmas time family movie. I probably won't be thinking about it much more after this conversation, but unlike the other Transformers movies, it wasn't a total torturous slog to get through. It's also less than 2 hours long, which was nice.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah. Well, okay, so you talked about Michael Bay. I do feel compelled to read a quote from Justin Chang of the Los Angeles Times because this is a classic. He says, "Few directors have pushed the boundaries of what is bearable, like Michael Bay, a visually incontinent action stylist who attacks his big screen canvases like a Jackson Pollock of pulverized metal."
Yeah, and
very good.
Let me jump in here. I love Justin Chang. Here's his lead for his review. "To describe Bumblebee as the best Transformers movie ever made may sound like such damningly faint praise as to border on the nonsensical. Do you remember your funniest migraine, your sexiest root canal?"
Yeah, so this is a classic. So I think we've already talked about the Michael Bayism, but he does pull it back here. And I think that there is a sweet story here. It does involve a Volkswagen, which We hate Volkswagen, the evil Empire Corporation, but we got beyond that.
I forgot
that
about
too.
Your personal drama with Volkswagen.
Right, my personal hatred toward Volkswagen, but we got beyond that. And I really thought that Hailee Steinfeld was perfect. You know, she has this teen angst, but it doesn't go over the top.
Yeah.
She's subjected to some bullying, but it's
She's
almost so farcical.
It's the pretty girls at the mall that are laughing at her for having a job.
She's an attractive young woman, and yet she's not sexy. She's not classic.
Which is something Michael Bay would have done.
Exactly. Yep. Michael Bay would not have cast her in any way, shape, or form.
No.
You talked about this being a family movie, and it was interesting because we spent the holidays with a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. And the 10-year-old fancies herself as 10 going on 16, which is actually the case a large part of the time. And the 7-year-old is still really into Legos and Avengers and all of these things. So we thought this movie would be a nice compromise. And it turned out to be such, but we had to sort of push both of them, or each of them, into going to this movie. And I think we all, the four of us, ended up enjoying it. So if you're looking for something, either on television, because I don't think, despite the action part of this, you don't have to see this on the big screen. I think that this would be a nice, relaxing, refreshing thing to watch.
Well, relaxing, I'm not so sure. But, you know, refreshing in so many respects. Look, I want to go back to what we first talked about, and that's Hailee Steinfeld. This movie is worth seeing for her. We can see CGI all over the place. It's in every movie anymore. But the scenes that she has with this CGI thing, she's acting up against a blue screen. And there were scenes that were truly affecting between her and this robot.
Yeah. And I liked that robot.
I did like the robot too, the eyes, you know.
Yeah.
But whatever the future talents of Travis Knight, my suggestion would be he stick with animation. But whatever his talents, I think the true treasure of this movie is Hailee Steinfeld.
Yeah, and I'm a little puzzled because I do agree with Nathan here. I think she's made an impression previously. And whether we're talking about True Grit or The Edge of 17,
yes,
she was even in those silly Pitch Perfect movies and so forth. Mm-hmm. So
supporting player, I would
point out. Okay, okay.
You could argue she's the lead of True Grit.
I agree.
There's bigger stars against her.
So
it's a movie about her.
So her in Bumblebee, maybe it's a revelation to people who haven't had the opportunity to see these other films, but we knew she had that talent. We are not sure that she had the talent to transform it. You know, I mean, we think of Rachel.
Transform it.
That was pretty tricky. I mean, like Rachel McAdams, I wasn't sure that she could be a comedic actor. And now we see Hailee Steinfeld doing these different things.
Well, it's interesting because to bring up Rachel McAdams, it's like Rachel McAdams was funny in Mean Girls, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah, she was. And then she went through this other period.
Yeah. And so here comes Hailee Steinfeld, and she was nominated for an Oscar for her first time out. She was great in The Edge of 17, which is a movie that more people should see. And here she is carrying a blockbuster CGI-heavy property that everybody knows. I mean, everybody knows the Transformers, and she makes it a movie about a girl and a robot. Even though the fate of the world hangs in the balance, it's mostly about
There's this potential love interest, but that doesn't become the focal point of the movie at all. He's more like her best friend.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think that I liked that part of it as well.
Yeah,
and the family.
Can we just say, please, no more Transformer movies?
Yeah. I'd be fine.
But you know, I mean, this is a prequel. You know they're going to go somewhere else.
I mean, this was the lowest grossing opening or whatever. So maybe we're done. But Transformers fatigue.
And that was Bumblebee. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Adam McKay's Dick Cheney biopic, Vice. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tavenant for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you, too, our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again weigh in on all things cinematic. Until then, remember this quote from the late writer D.H. Lawrence. When I read Shakespeare, I am struck with wonder that such trivial people should muse and thunder in such lovely language. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.